Good morning. I want to thank Rabbi Kalinsky for his kind introduction and for this wonderful opportunity, the beautiful weekend that we've had out here on the West Coast here in LA. Although I do have to tell you that I am looking forward to going back to Florida to thaw out a little bit and to warm up. I don't think we anticipated. No, don't apologize. You're no more in control of the weather than we are in Florida during hurricane season, so no apology necessary. There's a story of a Jewish woman who schleps to the Himalayas in search of a famous guru. You know this one. She travels by plane, train, and rickshaw to reach a Buddhist monastery in Nepal. And when she gets there, schwitzing, exhausted, having exerted great effort and spending a lot of money, an old lama in a maroon and saffron robe opens the door, and the woman promptly requests a meeting with the guru. So the lama explains, it's impossible. The guru's time is so valuable. He's famous, he's lost in meditation and contemplation, he's in silent retreat, he's meditating on a mountaintop, it's impossible. But she's not willing to take no for an answer. She insists she absolutely must go see the guru. And finally, the lama acquiesces, but gives her the following rules. Number one, the meeting must be brief. Number two, she has to bow when she meets and greets the guru. And number three, and most importantly, she cannot say more than 8 words. His time is so valuable, he's so lost in meditation, all she has are 8 words. And the woman agrees. Desperate to meet him, she agrees. So she hires a Sherpa and a yak, and she sets off on the grueling trek to make it to the top of the mountain where this guru is meditating. And with hardly an ounce of energy left, her spiritual search brings her to the opening of a cave high on top of a mountain. And keeping within the 8-word allotment that she has been given, she addresses the guru. She takes a deep breath. She sticks her head into the opening of the cave. She bows. And having carefully measured her 8 words, she simply says, "Sheldon, it's your mother. Enough already. Come home." Now, you all know this old Jewish joke. And the reason I open with it today is because we're living in a time in which mistakenly we think that the concepts of mindfulness, consciousness, presence, intentionality, we mistakenly think that these are new age, newfangled ideas that are introduced to us and brought to us by Eastern religions, by Buddhism, and we could not be more wrong. These are not ideas that are introduced or developed by modern psychology. They are what our sacred Torah are all about. They are what our system and platform of halacha are meant to generate and to promote within us. We are the originators of lives of meaningfulness and mindfulness, of consciousness and intention. Our sacred Torah sources and texts are replete with these ideas and these messages and these lessons and these values. Not to exclude or to reject the modern formulation or vocabulary, which has certainly brought it even greater to our attention and has elevated our practice of it. But make no mistake, these do not belong to the realm of the new, but they are part of our sacred, sacred tradition. And that's what I want to spend our time this morning sharing with you, is that leading a mindful life, a meaningful life, a conscious life, an intentional life, they're not nice ideas. It's not simply something that in today's day and age one should introduce. And I'm not going to share with you all the research, of which there's an endless amount, about the benefits of a mindful life, of being present in what we're doing, of not being fragmented and scattered and distracted and divided, but actually being immersed in whatever we're doing, the benefits on our physical health, our respiratory system, our cardiac system, literally benefits to our longevity and our health, the benefits to our psychological, emotional, spiritual health, and the impact it has on helping us, not with clinically diagnosed anxiety, depression, and the like, but just the regular neuroses that most of us go through. The benefits are not debatable. And I don't want to spend our time on it, but I want to show with you and trace with you through our tradition. I didn't make copies. I spared the OU. It's ink and paper. But I have about 44 pages of Makoros on this subject, and I'm happy to email them to anyone who would like to see them, or you can find them on my website. Pasuk says in Parshas Kisavu, "Shmartam is divrei abris hazos v'asisam osam." Torah tells us, Moshe very succinctly is communicating, The mandate and mission to observe Torah, shmartem, keep this brisk. This is our covenant, this is our commitment, this is our promise to Hashem. V'asisim osam, they're not just in theory, they're not abstract. We have to put them into practice, we have to execute them. And why? Moshe gives us the reason. The Torah is not shy, it doesn't hesitate to share with us why we are observing Torah and mitzvos. Says the Torah, Laman taskilu is kol asher ta'asun, which translates normally as, you shall observe the words of the covenant, you should perform them. Laman taskilu, so that you will succeed in all that you do. This pasuk, which seems so benign and is often neglected, at the end of Parshas Kisavo, is actually the mission statement of why we do what we do. Our lives are so deeply regulated. The details and minutiae from when we wake up in the morning, the first words of our mouth and how we wash our hands and what order we put on our shoes, till the moment we fall asleep at night, the last words out of our mouth, Shema and Amapil, and how to sleep and so on. And everything in between is so highly regulated and legislated, exactly what to do, how to get dressed and how to eat and what to look at and where to go and how to conduct ourselves in business and interpersonal reactions and with God and how to interact with our diet and our food, how to, every aspect of our lives. And the Torah is telling us why. Laman taskilu is kol asher ta'asun. Laman taskilu, the Ibn Ezra translates taskilu as kimo tatzlichu, so that you will succeed in all you do. Torah and mitzvos are there. Halacha is a framework to empower us to lead a successful life. To be successful. And to lead a successful life. But how do you measure success? What does that mean? What does that look like? Is success health and wellness? Is success having a lot of things? Is success getting into an Ivy League school? Is success living in the largest home? Is success knowing the most? Is success finding the greatest happiness and pleasure? What is tatzlichu? What does success mean? So the Targum Yerushalmi translates that word, laman taskilu, differently. It says, taskilu ditizbonenon yas komad demisabrin. Guard the words of Torah, observe mitzvos and halacha. Why? Ditizbonenon. What is tizbonenon, hisbonenos? It means, so you will be contemplative. So that you will contemplate. So that you will be mindful. So that you'll be conscious and aware and awake and immersed in everything you do. For the Targum, Laman Taskilu doesn't mean you'll be successful. And if it does, it's translating what is success. You know what success is? Being present in everything you do. Enjoying every moment. Savoring every opportunity. Taking, extracting, drawing out from every act of eating and drinking and conversation and time. From every sunset. From every moment with a child or grandchild. It is taking everything out of that experience. It's being fully present and immersed in it. A life of hisboninus, of contemplation, of mindfulness, a conscious life, of awareness, of presence. See, most of us are living lives that are exactly the opposite. We're on autopilot. We're creatures of habit and custom, of tradition, and of routine. We are pre-programmed. Several years ago, we lived in one home in Boca, and we moved to a house closer to the shul. This goes back many years. And I remember it was a good 2 weeks after we had moved. And I found myself in the driveway of my old house. I don't remember if I was coming home from shul or from an event, but I was on the phone, of course. And I found myself parked in the driveway of my old house, now belonging to someone else. And I was startled by just how embarrassed and humiliated and ashamed I felt of how unpresent I was in the act of driving, that literally the steering wheel and pedals, just as a creature of habit and routine, brought me back. I didn't remember one moment of the drive, one turn I made or one red light I sat at, or how much I accelerated, probably too much, or if I brake too quickly, because our lives are on autopilot. And that metaphor of finding ourselves in the wrong driveway, just out of habit, is also true in so many other areas. How many times do we find the sitter is closed, we finish davening, and we don't remember saying one word? How often do we find ourselves in the bottom of a bag of potato chips late at night, and we don't remember actively choosing to eat even one chip, or we said we'll just have one, and we find ourselves on the bottom of the bag? We're mindlessly and frantically going through life in unprecedented pace and speed, and we're absent present for most or much of the time. Sociologists, psychologists coined that phrase several years ago. Absent present. Absent present was coined much earlier by the Ramban in a letter, by the Baal Shem Tov, who made it famous, who said, "We are wherever our thoughts are." Absent present means your body may be one place, but if your mind and your thoughts are elsewhere, that's where you truly are. Walk into shul and you see people who are absent present, who might be able to check off that they daven Shacharis Mincha or Maariv, but if they were playing on their phone or their mind was wandering, they were never really there. Walk into a park and see parents pushing a child or grandparents, a grandchild on a swing, but looking at their phone, distracted by their text messages, checking out the latest score or news. And their body may say, it may register they were in the park. They may feel good that they spend time with children or grandchildren, absent present. Go to a restaurant and see a couple who are supposedly experiencing a date night and quality time together, but each under the table or on top of it. And that's absent presence. And so much of our lives are filled with absent presence. We are mindlessly and carelessly putting food into our mouths, which is why there's an obesity epidemic in this country. We allow the passage of time thoughtlessly. We're not mindful and present in all that we're doing. We are asleep even while we are awake. And being a creature of habit and routine leaves us with a feeling as if we can't change or grow, that we're stagnant or stuck, that our car is always going to take us to that old driveway, as if we lack the autonomy to change directions or trajectory or to go a different path when we do. That helplessness and hopelessness are the result of mindlessness. But if we can learn, which is what I want to speak to you about, the attribute and the trait, how to be present in all that we're doing, then we can drive ourselves wherever we want to go. And we don't have to feel like we're passengers in someone else's car. Harvard professors Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Gilbert published a study in the journal Science. What they found is mind-boggling. 46.9% of waking hours, people are thinking about something else other than what they are doing. Nearly 50% of the time, half of the time that we are awake, half the time that we're awake, maybe some of you are guilty of this right now, half the time that we are awake, we are thinking about something else other than what we're doing. Now, okay, if you're thinking about something else while you're brushing your teeth, the stakes aren't high. Now, dentists might argue the opposite, that we'd all have much better dental health if we actually were present while we were caring for our dental hygiene. But the stakes are not enormously high. But while we're at work, or while we're working on our relationships with the Ribbono Shel Olam or with others, when 50% of the time we're absent present instead of fully present, think of what we're missing out on. The opportunities and the joy and the pleasure and the bracha and the meaning. So says the Talmud Targum Yerushalmi, Leman Taskulu, all of this, every regulated part of our life, from what comes in our mouth and goes out of our mouth, and what we see and what we do and where we go and how we behave and how we interact, all of halacha, the whole platform of Torah and mitzvahs are leman taskiu leman tisbonenun, so that we can have contemplative lives. The halacha says when you wake up in the morning, don't mindlessly put on your shoes. You put the left one, then you put the right one, then the left one, you tie the left one, then the right one. Why? So there's Kabbalistic reasons, midas ha-din, midas ha-racham, and the preference for the left, the preference for the right. It's all important. I'm not old or wise enough to be able to tell you why. But I'll tell you what I get out of it. What I get out of it is that instead of randomly putting on your shoes, begin your day with an intentional act. From the Torah telling us how to wash our hands, the moda'ani that comes off of our lips even beforehand, how do we, what pant leg do you put on first? How do you get dressed? It's included in Shulchan Aruch. Why? To say nothing about your life should be random or mindless or thoughtless. Be present with everything that we do. Kashrus designed to make us thoughtful of what goes in our mouth. Time-bound mitzvos make us conscious of time. The rules of Lashon Hara make us cognizant of what we say. Modesty makes us think before we get dressed. Business ethics demand that we examine every decision that we make to see whether it conforms with our moral ideals and values. Leman taskilu, leman taslichu, leman tisbonenun. The formula is simple. You want a successful life. You want a productive and meaningful, a healthy physical and emotional and spiritual life. Leman tisbonenun. and stop being a zombie mindlessly drifting through life and become a thoughtful and mindful and present person. It's more complicated and challenging than it seems. It's very complicated. Technology brings enormous blessing. I embrace technology and try to harness all the good in it. I'm not here to tell you that technology is by definition or inherently evil or bad. I love it. I use it. But we have to use it with our eyes wide open. We have to use it judiciously and mindfully. And we have to understand that it is the biggest impediment to being fully present. It causes us to be absent present. And it's challenging us not to forfeit our lives, but to be able to embrace and to extract the best of everything. We're not the first to struggle with this. One of my favorite insights, it's quoted in many different people's names, is that when Hashem invites Moshe on top of the mountain to give him the Torah, and he says, "Ale elai ha'hara v'heyesham," climb the mountain, v'heyesham, and be there. Rashi's bothered by the redundancy, as are others. If ale elai ha'hara, if you're climbing the mountain, why does Hashem have to say, v'heyesham, be there? If you're on top of the mountain, obviously you're on top of the mountain. Where else would you be? Isn't it redundant to say, v'heyesham? So many have the suggestion, the insight. What God was telling Moshe is very simple. Moshe says, I know how busy you are. I know that there's 2 to 3 million people at the base of the mountain. I know how many text messages are waiting. And I know Facebook messages and direct messages on Twitter and Instagram. I know how many phone calls you have to return. And FaceTime. I understand how many people want a piece of your time. I understand how much you have to do. But when you climb on top of this mountain, when you're supposed to be with me, Ale Elai Ahara, climb on top of the mountain, and Heye Shum. When you're supposed to be with me, be there. Be present. Those 2 to 3 million people, they'll be waiting for you when you climb down from the mountain. When we're done with our interaction and our rendezvous and our time, you'll be able to turn to all of their needs. But while you're with me, Heye Shum. And that is the epidemic, that is the plague, that is the challenge of our generation, of the Heye Shum, to be there, to be present in all and everything we're doing. I spoke about this yesterday in Hadas Torah in the shul, and I won't repeat it now. But Yaakov Avinu has his major breakthrough wrestling with the angel. Why? Because Vayivaser Yaakov, how? Levadel. Friday night I spoke about the Chizkuni's interpretation that we don't need from the Gid Anasha to commemorate. He was levado. He was abandoned and neglected by his 11 sons and by everyone else. He went back to get the Pachim Kitanim by himself. Chizkuni was bothered. Rashi, the Rashbam, the Rambam, they all understand, why don't we eat the Gid Anasha? Because we're commemorating Yaakov wrestled and he triumphed. But the Chizkuni's bothered, and so should you be. That's not the Jewish way. Everyone knows the old Jewish definition of a holiday. They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat. So with the Gid Anasha, he tried to kill us, we won, let's not eat? Said the Chizkuni, it makes no sense. So rather, we don't eat from the Gid Anasha, not to commemorate Yaakov won. He says to commemorate that Yaakov was abandoned, he was left alone, he was neglected. And a Jew never does that to a fellow Jew. And that's why we don't need the Gid Anasha, to remember our responsibility to be there for one another. In the Zohar, the Gid Anasha, every organ and limb of the body corresponds with a different day on the calendar. And Gid Anasha corresponds with Tisha B'Av, not for now. That was Friday night. But Shabbos morning I spoke about in the positive. Yaakov is a breakthrough. He wrestles with his alter ego. He struggles with that voice of self-sabotage. And he has a breakthrough. And what is the circumstance that enables and allows and promotes him to be able to have that breakthrough? He is levado. He didn't only leave his children behind, he left his cell phone behind. He left his smartphone behind. And only when he was by himself, levado, only when he was present, experiencing time, we spoke about being comfortable in our own skin, the ability to be alone. The incredible study that showed that people prefer 67% of men, 26% of women in a room by themselves where the only thing to do is to give yourself a shock, an electric shock, chose to shock themselves rather than be alone and lost in their own thoughts. That's how painful it is for us to be alone. And if you doubt it, at a red light, look over and see everyone grab their phone. And in an elevator, watch everyone grab their phone. Because the notion of spending one moment by ourselves, lost in our own thoughts, is unbearably painful. And yet, it's where real contemplation and thoughtfulness, it's where creativity, it's where breakthrough occur, levado, our ability to be alone. And I shared in shul, and I shared again with you this morning, that today I think is day 42 or 43. I have a habit tracker on my phone where I'm trying to follow it. That I made a commitment when I realized and I confess to you, a room full of strangers, but I live on the East Coast, so it's okay, I won't see you again so soon, that I struggle from this plague. and that I couldn't even make it through a davening without feeling I got to check what's going on my phone. I'd feel a buzz, an alert, a vibration, a buzz, a beep, and say, "Whoa, someone must need me. Maybe someone died. Maybe it's a shiloh from the mikvah. Maybe my wife, some emergency. I can't disconnect even for the period of time of davening." So I made a commitment, and I made it to others. We have a WhatsApp group and check in to reinforce one another, that I put my phone on airplane mode before every tefillah, if not leave it in my office or in the car. To not walk into a conversation with God and fail to veheyesham, to be there. That was my promise and pledge to Hashem. I'm on day, I think, 42. And hopefully it will only continue. And I challenge and encourage you to join. To turn your phone, you know, many people don't know this. You're allowed to put your phone on airplane mode even while you're on the ground. I don't know if you knew that. It works. You're allowed to. Silence not enough because you feel it vibrate or buzz because you still in the back in the recesses of your mind are curious and you want to check. But if you turn it off or put it on airplane mode or leave it behind, then you know nothing new is coming in. There's no temptation to even look. Ve'yesham. Now the truth is it's a promise and pledge I'm trying to fulfill to Hashem, but it's a promise and pledge I should make to my wife and to my chavrusa and to every person when I begin every meeting. We should begin every meeting by the ritual of showing one another, I'm putting my phone on airplane mode. Ve'yesham, I'm with you. There are no distractions. I'm not fragmented, I'm not diverted, I'm not distracted. I am here and only here. Ve'yesham, to regain that capacity to mindfully be present with whatever we're doing. To walk into the park with a child and grandchild, the phone's on airplane mode. Walk into minyan, walk into dinner with a spouse for date night, walk into a meeting or conversation, ve'yesham. We're climbing the mountain, alei alei hahara. We're climbing the mountains, but we're failing the relationships because we're not fully there. We are wherever our mind is. And when our mind is stuck in the past, either nostalgic for what was, or with regret for what could have been, or our mind is lost in the future, filled with anxiety and worry of what will be, then we are forfeiting the only dimension we actually live in. And the only dimension we live in is the here and now, is the present. That's the only one we can control. As I said, I'm happy to share with you many, many, many Mar Makomas on this subject. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, is an outstanding one. The Gemara says, Ein danan la'adam ela lefi ma'asav shel oso shah. Do you know that on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Aseres Yimei Teshuva, the period of judgment, and really it's true every single day of the entire year, we are not ever judged for our past. It's so counterintuitive, and we've never thought of it in this way, but we are not judged for the past. What do you mean I'm not judged for the past? What else is there if not what I did in the past? Gemara says judgment only comes not about the past because you can't change the past. And you're not judged for the future because it hasn't yet arrived. The only dimension we live in, the only dimension we can control, and therefore the only dimension for which we are accountable is the present. Now the past is significant. The way the past informs my present. If I say, oh, remember when we used to do that, and that was amazing, and I used to be like that, and if I still hold on nostalgically to my mistakes of the past, then they are compromising me in my present. But it is only my present that I'm responsible for. I can't change the past, and I'm not yet up to the future. All we have is the present. The Gemara in Kiddushin, and Daf Mem Tes Amid Beis, the Gemara makes an outstanding statement. A man stands under a chuppah, and he turns to a woman, he says, Harei mekudeshesli amenasha anitzade gamur. He says, behold, I'm married to you on condition that I am a tzaddik gamur. I am the most righteous person in the world. And the Masadar Kedushin sees the chassan on his way to the chuppah coming out of McDonald's. And not like needed a Diet Coke or the bathroom, munching, chowing down on a cheeseburger. Masadar Kedushin picked up the chassan from jail, where he was convicted of several crimes, on his way to the chuppah. And the chassan says, Harei mekudeshesli, behold, we're married, I'm a tzaddik. Is the kedushin chal? Is it a good wedding? Is the condition fulfilled? And the Gemara says, yes, absolutely. How could that be? The Gemara says, Shema hear her b'tshuva. Because, so what, he just got out of jail? Or so what, he was finishing the cheeseburger, it was still stuck in his beard as he stood under the chuppah. Shema hear her b'tshuva. That past is irrelevant, it's insignificant, it's inconsequential. If in the moment, if in the present, he has determined to be someone else, the present is what we care about. The present is what matters. The present is all that there is. The past matters in the way that it informs our present. And the future matters in how it informs our present. But the only dimension we live in is the present. And so many of us are so busy forfeiting it. We're losing out on it. Older people are lost in the past, and younger people are lost in their future. And it's as if nobody's living in the present. Nobody is there in the only place that matters. The Rambam in the second parak of Pirkei Avos of Mishnah Yagimel says, Roa es hanolad, the attribute, the quality, the trait of being Roa es hanolad, which we usually translate as the capacity, the Roa es hanolad is to understand the consequence of the ramification of my deed. The Rambam writes there, Nolad Roa es hanolad, it doesn't say Roa es haasid, see the future. The Rambam in his commentary points out, it says Roa es hanolad. What is the word nolad? Why does it say Roa es hanolad, not Roa es haasid? Roa es haasid means look to the future, understand that what you're about to do now, it's going to have ramifications and consequences. But that's not what the Mishnah means. For the Rambam, what it means is Roa es hanolad. Look at what you're doing right now in the present to see what will be nolad, what will be born from it. For the Rambam, Roa es hanolad is not being distracted from the present to look to the future. It is living the present in high definition. It's living the present on steroids. It's living the present where every decision, choice, behavior, thought, conversation of the present is with an eye on what is going to be nolad, what will be born from it, the impact it will make. We all know the great poem, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, today is a gift from above, and that's why it's called the present. It's the only dimension we have. Dr. John Kabat-Zinn is the modern guru of mindfulness. And he has a quote, now is always the right time because it's the only time. Now is always the right time because in fact it's the only time. And you have to understand that the consequence of abandoning the present, of forfeiting the here and now, of not being ve'yesham, but being absent present, can be catastrophic. Catastrophic to the relationships that we have and that we supposedly cherish, but if we don't give the time and attention and we're not really there, can easily dissolve. Catastrophic to the judgment and the decisions that we have to make throughout the day. I mean like not noticing. If you're not present while you're walking and you're looking down at your phone and the potential danger that you're having. When we hear, is this an earthquake? It's just the Labadik group next door. Okay. I've never had an earthquake. I'm kind of curious. Not that I'm looking for one. But I want to be present, fully present in sharing these thoughts with you. And that would be a distraction. When we think of the name Christopher Reeve, we always think of Superman. Superhuman. We picture a strong and handsome man, incredibly brave, who performed his own stunts. And yet, Christopher Reeve died disabled, severely limited, impaired, a quadriplegic. And he once described the accident that left him that way. He was riding a horse in an equestrian race, and the horse fell on top of him, effectively changing his life forever. He said that before that particular race, he knew that there was one hurdle which was very, very difficult. One hurdle which was hard to clear, hard to jump. But the accident that changed his life forever didn't happen on that hurdle. It happened on the hurdle just before that one. And Christopher Reeve described, he explained, that he was so fixated, so concerned, so lost thinking about the hurdle that would be difficult, that he took his mind off the one before. And he pled with us. He said, Superman was brought down, he lost the use of his body, because he was thinking about the future and he abandoned the present. Not living in the present can cost us the use of our body. And the same kryptonite that brought down Superman threatens to compromise and to deplete our lives of the meaning and joy that we deserve and that we are capable of. The Gemara Chagiga Yeral tells us, Yachol Yishol Adam Mala Mala, Mala Mata, Malafnim, Mala Achor. If a person dwells on four things, what is above, what is below, what is before, and what is after, it would have been better that they weren't born. A person whose only concern is what was and what will be loses what is. And if you're not living in the present and you're not focused on what is, then you might as well not be here at all. So how do we grow in our sense of mindfulness? Well, part of it is technology, as we said. It is intentionally and mindfully and consciously choosing to disconnect. It used to be the default was you were not connected unless you made the choice to connect. Today, the choice, the default is that you're connected unless you choose to actively and proactively and consciously disconnect. And that's the first practical takeaway or piece of advice. Like I shared with you the challenge that I gave myself and some friends, I offer to you. Is the most important moments of your day and of your life that you claim you want to be fully present, that you want to alei hahara, you want to climb that mountain to be with your children, your spouse, to be with the Ribono Shalom and Tefillah, to be with that learning, with the sacred text that's open in front of you, to be ve'yeh sham, to have a ritual where you disconnect from that which is around you so that you can connect to that which is in front of you. The Mesilas Yesharim has an entire parak. Mesilas Yesharim is a really a 12-step, the original 12-step program to Shleimus, to perfection, from Pinchas ben Yair. And the step of Zihirus that precedes Zrizus. Zrizus is a step of alacrity and zeal and enthusiasm. Zrizus is how to wake up like a lion and greet your day. How to have goals and make resolutions and chart plans to achieve them. Personally, professionally, religiously, spiritually. But before you can embark on a life of Zrizus, says the Ramchal, you have to first grow in your Zihirus. What is Zihirus? Zahira says that Ramchal is to actually be present in everything you do. To be thoughtful. Again, this is such a foreign idea for us. Could you imagine thinking about everything you say before you say it? How much damage could be avoided? How much hurt? If we actually thought before we said, not afterwards, oh boy, that probably wasn't the right thing to say. How many deals could be done? How much success could be met? How many relationships would still exist or would be thriving? Zahiris is to be thoughtful before I speak, to be thoughtful where I go, to be thoughtful in the choice I make. It's thoughtfulness. It's intention. Long before modern mindfulness, the Ramchal and Rav Pinchas ben Yair were telling us, master Zahiris, caution, care. Because if you unleash unbridled Zahiris, if you simply, with a reckless abandon, live a life of enthusiasm and alacrity, you will trample all kinds of people and things along the way. And so before you can unleash that torrent of Zrizus, a person has to grow in Zihirus. How can I improve on thinking before I speak? How can I improve on thinking before I do and choices I make? And understand their background, their context, their ramification, their consequence. To live what the Rambam says, to be roa na ta es ha'asid, de roa es hanolad. Rav Yossel Yozel Hurwitz, the author of Navardik, has a quote. He says, the power of the Yetzirah, the power of the Satan, lies in rushing a person to carry out an action right away, before he or she stops to consider and wonder what he's doing. The deed is done, and there he stands, deliberating after the fact. How much of our lives are filled with regret? Immediately after the fact. The empty bag of potato chips that we mentioned earlier. Again, this is just autobiographical. Thank you for allowing me to share my biggest challenges. You were going to start with one chip, and there you are, the bottom of an empty bag. You were going to connect. That was going to be the tefillah that changed your life. And there you are, closing the siddur. You don't remember saying one word. You're finishing the time that you allotted in your limited schedule with people you love. And you never got to the conversations you meant to have. You never felt that intimacy, that affection, that connection. After the fact, the entire methodology in the Altar Navardik has taken this also from the Ramchal. And Mesilas Yesharim develops the idea that the methodology of the Yetzer Hara is exactly what the Harvard researchers found. It's working. The Yetzer Hara is gratified and satisfied that 50% of the time of our lives, we are thinking about something other than what we're doing. That is an enormous victory for the Yetzer Hara. And the way to combat it is to return and to be fully present. Not to zone out or tune out, but to zone in and tune in. Ve'yesham. To make a conscious decision to be fully present where and what we're doing. Now we get 24 hours a week where we get to practice this. We are one of the last vestiges on earth. We will soon be studied by sociologists. I really believe in our lifetime, we Orthodox Jews, Shomer Shabbos Jews, will be studied in the world because we will be among the rarity in the world of people who are able to disconnect, not for 10 minutes or an hour, but for an entire day. Think about the world we're living in and how more rare and rare and unique that will become. How more and more rare that will become. Why do we have Shabbos? Shabbos is the Ribono Shel Olam saying, Alei Alei Hahara Veheyesham. Be with me and be with the people around you. Sit at a Shabbos table and there's nothing buzzing or beeping or vibrating or nothing that's distracting you or calling you to have to go elsewhere, or that's going to now change your mindset because you've learned of something new. The ability to rest physically, to achieve a spiritual quiet and a rest, to really be present in what we're doing, to be a Shomer Shabbos in the truest sense of the word. Rav Chaim Friedlander, the Mashgiach of Panovich, in the Sifsei Chaim, has a volume, an enormous part of one of the volumes of Sifsei Chaim is on Menuchas HaNefesh. Menuchas HaNefesh, which essentially is mindfulness. It's being present in what we're doing. And he quotes there a Gemara that says, Talmidei Chachamim are bebechinas Shabbos the whole week long. The righteous are living with Shabbos the whole week long. What does it mean, the righteous are living with Shabbos the whole week long? It means that the serenity and tranquility, the sense of consciousness and presence that we achieve, we try to achieve, we're lucky to achieve on Shabbos, the righteous are able to turn to the whole week long. If you really had an audience ever with a righteous person, a holy man or woman, one of the things that you notice in that interaction is they were fully there with you. They may have much more on their plate than you'll ever have. They have more things to do and more people that rely on them. And yet, they have the ability when they're with you, you are all that is, all that exists in the entire world. Talmidei Chachamim, the righteous are bebechinas Shabbos the entire week long, and we too have that ability. I only noticed these words this past Friday night. We refer to in Lecha Dodi Shabbos as Mekor HaBracha. It is the source of blessing in our lives. To take the model and the experience of Shabbos, to re-energize and charge our batteries, to remember what it's like to disconnect and connect, and to take that experience with us into the rest of the week. Another area that we fail in our mindfulness that's having terrible health consequences is our failure to breathe, is the shallow breathing in our lives. The word neshama for soul is the same word as neshima for breath. And that's not a coincidence. Because how did we first get our breath? How did we first get our neshama, rather? Vayipach bi'apav neshmas chayim, the Ribono Shel Olam breathed a piece of himself. He breathed life into us. Everything else in creation in the world came about. Bi'asara ma'maros nivra ha'olam. God spoke and it created. There's only one thing that he didn't speak to create, but he created with his own breath. He created by inhaling kivyachol within himself and breathing into us. The Nefesh HaChaim, Chaim V'Lozhner, describes it, the mashal in Kabbalah, of a glass blower. My family and I traveled this past summer and we saw glass blowing. And I thought of that Nefesh HaChaim, how the glass blower doesn't take a superficial breath from the larynx or the voice box, but has to inhale deep from within the diaphragm and inserts that in order to make the glass expand. And the Ribono Shel Olam, that's how Kabbalah wants us to understand, he took a deep breath within himself, he breathed it into us. You know, the difference is enormous. If you've ever tried to blow up a balloon for your kid's birthday party, you probably needed to take a nap after two balloons. It's exhausting. When you take the deep breath, when you inhale from deep within your side yourself, when you take that breath that's a part of who you are, it comes from the deepest place of yourself. The Ribono Shel Olam breathed himself. Everything else, Asar Baruch Sha'amar Vaya Olam. Everything else he created by speaking, the only thing he created by breathing was us. We are Tzelem Elokim. We walk around with a piece of the Ribono Shel Olam in us. But you know, we forget about it. Because we're so busy by the goof, our body distracts us from the neshama. This competition, this conflict that Yaakov and Esav were fighting about. The Nefesh Bahami and the Chelek Elokim Mimal, Mamish. The animal instinct and animal impulse in us that says, eat and drink and pursue pleasure, accumulate and amass material things. And the neshama that says you're capable of so much more. Be disciplined and be regulated and reach and strive for much, much higher. That eternal battle that we all go through every moment of every day. How do we win? The Yetzirah wins by trying to cause us to forget that we have a neshama and to think that we are a goof. You see this colloquially. People will use the expression, you know, I am a body, but I also have a neshama. When it's exactly the opposite. You are a neshama. And you have a body. Our neshama is wearing the body. Rav Nachman of Breslov described that the body is like the suit. I have to wear a suit professionally. My kids know when I go on vacation when the tie comes off, and at the end of the summer, the first time they see me put a tie back on, they say, "Zai gesund, Abba, it was nice knowing you, we'll see you next summer." I wear a suit. A suit is like wearing a straight jacket the entire day. I'm so envious of my doctor friends and colleagues who wear scrubs all day. But they complain, the problem with wearing scrubs is when you go home, there's nothing more comfortable to change into. So if you wear a suit all day, it's like wearing a straight jacket, you can't wait to take it off and to just dress down and relax. Rabbi Nachman said, his soul can't wait for the next world where he'll be able to disrobe the body that's holding him back and to be comfortable. It's not that we are a body and we have a soul. We are a soul and we have a body. But our body, we're so lost in our body and our definition with our body and indulging our body and pursuing the pleasures of the body that we sometimes neglect and forget that we have a soul. We're mindless. The Yetzer Hara is working 50% of the time, even when we're doing the activities that nourish our soul. The Bikur Cholim that we learned about this morning so beautifully, the Tefillah, Talmud Torah, even when we're doing the activities that nourish our soul, we forget because we're so indulging the body. How do we remember we have a soul? The answer is the etymology of the word itself. The way to make contact with the neshama is through neshima, is by doing deep breathing. Our breathing is so shallow. Our respiratory systems are not functioning the way they're supposed to. We're not nearly getting in the oxygen we are meant to get. And one of the reasons is today, because we're always looking down at a device. And so we're not able to open up our airways to breathe the way we're meant to. And when we're not breathing, when we don't have neshima, then we're not in contact with our neshama. Disconnect and connect with your neshama. Be mindful and present in everything that we are doing. Take time every day to regulate your breathing, to do deep breathing, to be fully present in what we do. You know, life can be either a thermometer or a thermostat. What's the difference between a thermometer and a thermostat? A thermometer tells you the temperature, but a thermostat controls it. So most of us live our lives like we're a thermometer. I could tell you when I'm impatient or when I'm angry, when I'm frantic, when I'm overwhelmed, when I'm anxious, when I'm worried, when I'm running. We forfeit our lives and we think we're just a thermometer who can measure the temperature, but we are a thermostat. We can regulate it and we can control it. And we do it through our neshima. We do it through the breathing that we do. That is what our lives are meant to be. This is not a new problem. Technology has exacerbated, compounded it, but it's not new. The Chovas HaLevavos, Rabbeinu Bachi Ibn Pekuda, writes in the Chovas HaLevavos, a tefillah, a special, he writes in Shara Bitachon, a special prayer against what he calls Pizur HaNefesh, the fragmentation of the soul, being diverted in so many different directions simultaneously, and the failure to the challenge, the ability to concentrate. We're starting Chanukah soon. In the halacha, the Gemara says in Shabbos Chaf Aleph that one can light the Chanukah candles. I'll just leave you with the Dvar Torah on Chanukah. Is ad shetich l'regel min hashuk. You have until people are no longer walking out in the street, ad shetich l'regel min hashuk. You have until people are no longer walking outside in the street. So the simple understanding is that defines the halacha. The whole goal of Chanukah candles is pursue meinisa, to publicize the miracle. If nobody's outside to see your candles, you haven't publicized anything. So that is the end time of when you can light candles. And there's literature, and halachic literature today has that end time changed with artificial lighting and the fact that people are out in the street much longer. But the Sfas Emes so beautifully quotes his grandfather, his Zayda, the Chedusha Arim, who offers a homiletical interpretation that this is not the sheer, the measurement of the last time you could light Chanukah candles, but rather it's giving us a different insight into the essence of the holiday of Chanukah. Says the Hilag Chedusha Arim, Ad Shetich LaRegel Min Hashuk means Ad Shetich LaHergel Min Hashuk. It doesn't mean until the legs stop walking in the public thoroughfare. It means that we light the candles to illuminate what's right before our eyes, to break out of the hergel, the habits that we formed in our lives. The habit that 50% of the time we're thinking about something other than what we're doing. For 8 days, we light candles and we illuminate to see what's right under our nose and what's right before our eyes, to recognize the bracha that we are neglecting because we're mindlessly ignoring it. At shetichla, not regel, at shetichla, hergel min hashuk. 8 days of trying to purge habit. 8 days of breaking routine. 8 days of mindfulness, intention, consciousness. 8 days of being present in all that we're doing. I'm out of time. I'm getting the hook from Rabbi Kalinsky, but I'll end by telling you that if we had more time, I'm tempted to ignore him because it's my last presentation, but I'm not going to. But I know there's more presentations to come, so I'm really ending.
If anybody wants to go to the legal seminar, they can
feel free to walk out. But I really am ending. If I had more time, I would share with you, and again, if you want the source sheets, I'm happy to send them to you, that every area of halacha, I can show you Torah sources that explain the reason behind those halachas is to instill mindfulness, consciousness, presence in all that we do. Whether it's the Mea Brachas B'chol Yom, whether the fact that we're supposed to make 100 brachas a day, so that 100 times a day we're mindful with what we're doing and checking in with what we're doing. The Or HaChaim who says the Chet of Adam Arishon, when he ate from the Eitz Hadas, it was mindless eating, and it set us off on the wrong way to begin with, to have mindless eating. Mindfulness in mitzvos, mindfulness in every single area. My friend Dr. Benji Epstein wrote a beautiful, beautiful book that came out this year on mindfulness in Judaism, also replete with inspiration and magnificent sources. The noted French naturalist Jean-Henri Fabre studied caterpillars. And he said the following. Rabbi Kolinsky, I'm really ending with this. He noticed that they have a special instinct to follow and lockstep the caterpillar directly in front of them. So he tested his observation with the following experiment. He took a flower pot and he placed the number of caterpillars in single file around the circumference of the rim of the flower pot. And each caterpillar's head touched the caterpillar in front of it. And then he placed the caterpillar's favorite fruit in the middle of the circle, in the middle of the pot. And what he found was that every caterpillar followed the one ahead of it, thinking it was heading home to get food. And they kept moving in circles, first for hours, and they moved in circles literally for days. And after a few days of mindless motion, don't tell this to PETA, but the caterpillar started to drop dead from exhaustion and starvation. The food was right in front of them. The food was in the middle of the flower pot. But they were mindlessly in motion, just following the one in front of them. And therefore, one by one, they dropped dead of exhaustion and starvation. And he noted that all they had to do to avoid certain death was to stop moving, was to disconnect from the motion that was carrying them, the momentum that was carrying them. And the food was right there. The processionary caterpillars just kept moving mindlessly and brought about their own demise. Unlike caterpillars, we have the ability to change direction, to pursue what we need. But like caterpillars, we often confuse motion and movement with meaning and activity. And we continue mindlessly, neglecting what's right in front of us. And so my message to you this morning is to slow down and savor life. Savor a magnificent sunset. We on the East Coast in Florida and Boca, we have a magnificent sunrise. So many years ago, we realized and we said, you know, we got to take advantage of that. We now have every Friday of Erev Shabbos Mevorchim, we have a sunrise minyan at the beach. There's a gazebo overlooking the ocean, and we meet and we remind ourselves once a month that with Hanetzach Hama, there it is, the sun rises exactly when it's supposed to. It's magnificent. You can organize once a month a mincha minyan, a marav minyan, to watch the sunset. To savor those moments. Savor the time with your family members. Savor a car ride. Savor a book. Savor a cup of coffee. Savor a walk. Savor life by disconnecting. Not like processionary caterpillars bringing about our own demise, but rather l'man taskilu, l'man tatzlichu, l'man tatizbonenun. To be present in all that we do, and by being present, to be able to find the success that we all crave. Thank you very much. Yeah.